have a question for you.
Oh, no. Okay. Who's you?
Both of you guys.
Which one of us is excluded?
All three of you guys. Well, Jeremy okay. already knows this question. Okay. You know those, like, have you been to Kilwin's?
Yes.
Have you tried their caramel?
We haven't been. Why are you looking at me?
What
like
is
we...
Kilwin's?
Are you kidding?
Oh, my goodness. The candy store in Portsmouth?
Is?
Oh, the,
you want to yes. share?
No.
Yes, the
yelling
ice cream.
Into the microphone yep. from across the room here.
Sorry, I got to readjust.
Jeremy off the port bow.
What a fast swimmer.
Whoa,
what a swim.
What a swim.
I feel out of that one.
That's the Little Mermaid.
Oh, okay. In my head.
Off the port bow.
In my mind, I thought of Jim Carrey, and I don't know, in some movie.
Give him a show.
Anyways, my question for you. I guess, no, it's not a question anymore, because you don't know what
I know it is.
Give
it
us
is.
Your statement.
The statement is, their caramel apples are the best, and they slap. You know those, like, Werther's Originals?
It's just such a funny phrase.
They...
That's
wow.
how she describes good food every time.
Yes.
This slaps. It's, that's a Haley.
Okay, that's a new t-shirt. This slaps. Oh, wait. Oh. That probably should be on a t-shirt.
You got to put it in the right place.
Anyways, every Tuesday before we record, we go on dates usually, right? You guys go on a date. We go on a date separately, sometimes together. But anyways, I always go. We go to Kilwin's after we get... Dollar tacos. We've mentioned this before in the podcast.
We are already so old and do the same thing every day.
We've done that our whole marriage.
It's great.
We do not deviate.
Yeah. It's fine because it's fine. I think, I don't know, I like it. I don't mind it and it's good. I look forward to the queso fundido over time. But anyways,
the
Kilwin's
Taco Bell dog say?
Has the...
Sorry, Haley.
Go ahead. Finish my comment. All I have to say
finish your statement.
Is if you want a good caramel apple, is it caramel or caramel? That's
caramel.
The question. Caramel.
Caramel.
I'm just kidding. It's caramel popcorn, but caramel every other time.
What?
So they're they have an apple. Actually, my friend Kelly, shout out to Kelly.
What's up,
she made, so... My favorite caramel apple has, like, it's caramel dipped with white chocolate on the outside, and it's, like, sprinkled with, like, cinnamon and sugar, and they call it an apple pie caramel apple. It is the best thing. I don't like white chocolate. White chocolate should be, deserves to be in the trash, but this somehow is magical, and the concoction is perfect, and it tastes so good. And they sell them at Disney, too, but they're not as good as Kilwin's, but maybe it's just because I'm used to it.
Better because they have marshmallows from Mickey.
They do have marshmallows at the top. So anyways, our friend Kelly, we went to Disney this past summer, and we didn't see them. I didn't see them when we were at the confectionery. But anyways, they didn't have them. I was sad about it. She went home, and she recreated it. And I didn't try it because she said it wasn't the best.
She said they weren't good. But
the reason why is because she didn't have white chocolate. So she had like vanilla melting chocolate and it wasn't the same.
Oh, those are so different.
Yeah. So she said she wants to try and make them again. But anyways, if you're looking for a good caramel apple, you go to Kilwin's and get your good caramel apple.
You said camel. Just throwing it up.
Camel apple.
I feel like caramel apples are just so messy.
No. They cut it for you.
Oh, I enjoy that. Oh.
Yes. And tonight, actually, it was annoying because the woman there, God bless her soul.
She might listen one day.
She was like giving me a hard time because I asked for it to be cut. And I've always had they always ask me if I want it cut. I'm like, absolutely. I'm eating it now. It's great. She gave me a hard time about it. She's like, well, now it's busy, so I'm going to cut it just this once for you. And I was like, there's like four people in here, and they can wait. They're all in line for the ice cream.
And
it was just weird.
This once,
but then she started like venting about how busy it's been. So I could tell she was just stressed. So I was trying to give her the grace. But I was just like, come on, caramel
apple.
I
leveled with her.
Yeah, you did. You actually did. I was still just like kind of upset, but Jeremy calmed me down. It's like
I worked retail.
Yeah.
But anyways, that's my little tidbit for tonight.
Thank you for that question.
What a great question.
It would have been a question if you knew what I'm talking about with the caramel from Kilwin's. My question was, is caramel from the Werther's original better?
Werther's. You figured it out. On the car, we were saying Weatherman.
Werther's original. Say that 20 times fast.
No, thanks.
Didn't even say it once.
Werther's original. Werther's originals. Anyways, is it their caramel? Does that slap? Or is it Kilwin's caramel that slaps? And I vote Kilwin's.
Do your own testing at home, folks. Slap your caramel and let us know.
Anyways.
I was trying to figure out how to do that. That's so good.
That reminded me of the Annie segment that was like the radio station. That there you have it, folks. I don't remember.
Smile,
what you said.
Darn you.
Yeah. I don't think
smile, darn you.
I don't
smile.
Think anyone knows this. We haven't talked about this yet. But Robbie Fredette was bald once.
I was.
Yeah.
Yeah, go on to share that.
That's when my cousin Claudia thought he was really hot. We were how old were we? 10? Not you.
Me?
Not you.
I was never 10, darling.
I think she was 10 or 11, and she came to see Annie, and she was like, Daddy Warbucks, he's hot. And I was like, Claude, that's disgusting.
I call all my boyfriends Daddy.
Daddy Warbucks?
It was really the Warbucks that got
it. Yeah. And it's, fun fact, I played his daughter in it.
Fun fact.
Nope,
I also
we're not doing that game.
Once.
Nope, no, man, we're stopping there.
I had red hair. I played Annie. And Marie.
She was going Charlotte's Web. She was going real far back, okay?
Oh, Charlotte's
Web. That was
Web.
The year before.
That's enough.
Who
far
you,
enough.
Who were you in Charlotte's Web?
I was her dad.
Oh, you were your dad.
I was my dad.
She played her own father.
I never knew my father.
That's so funny.
Anyway, so
what were we talking about, my guy?
No, well, they were. You guys were a nanny too.
Yeah.
Yep.
Why don't we share that?
I wasn't talking to her. I was talking to Jeremy.
Jeremy
and you. You guys were both a nanny.
Rooster, but
do your crow call, whatever it's like.
It's not called a crow call.
Isn't it?
I played rooster. But I also played
cock-a-doodle-doo.
Cock-a-doodle-doo. Why do we call it cock-a-doodle-doo? It's more.
Why
of a
do you call it crow paw?
I didn't call it crow paw.
Yes, you did. It's on. Said, it's on camera.
I said crow caw.
Sure. Roll back the tapes.
Replay.
I played rooster, but I made it a personal goal. No one talked about my role as rooster. I had a random person that I played on the president's cabinet.
So good.
That I made a personal goal to make that more memorable than the main character I played.
And it was.
And
Who were you?
I don't remember, but I was imitating our friend John Flynn, who played that role when I was younger. I saw him play it.
Yeah, but he was
the
Ronald
president.
Reagan in
yeah,
that.
He was the
not
president.
Ronald Reagan,
so I was,
FDR.
Oh,
so I
yes.
was imitating not him Ronald. When he did the show forever. And I guarantee you, every time it finished, no one complimented my rooster. They just liked that one scene of the president's thing.
Do you remember your line?
No.
I almost have it. I don't know. I just remember you slapping the table, and you were always throwing papers around or something
throwing
like
papers
that.
Yeah, I think it had a swear in it.
Yeah, I think so, too.
I'm pretty sure it was like, damn it, why you did like, it had something in it that I don't remember.
Yes.
I don't remember, but it was just like this one angry man that had a problem with everything.
Yeah, yes. You always slapped the table.
Yeah.
And all the people at the Christian school thought it was hilarious.
Loved it.
They did.
Yeah.
Laughed every time.
Yep. Those were good times. We were all big theater geeks back in the day. Good times.
Yeah.
So anyways, guys.
Little theater turds.
What's new with you? What's working on your hearts? What's God working on your hearts? That did not make any sense.
What's the good Lord chiseling away these days?
There you go.
Go ahead.
Darling.
Go ahead, girl. Go ahead.
I said go ahead.
Oh.
You don't want
to
talk.
I just need a minute to process the conversation or the thought.
What is a chiseling? Is that? Oh, he feels each area. Where is he working? That's how Christians should greet each other.
No,
yo, man, what's chiseling?
What's chiseling? That's a t-shirt.
What?
Like that. So, like, what's up?
What's chiseling?
I was trying to think of a answer. Netflix and chill, but like Bible and chisel. Can't think of it.
Bible and chisel. That's good. That's good. We're going nowhere tonight. Let's, so I think I'm just going to rant if somebody doesn't have a better conversation.
I'll stop you if I need to.
Okay, good. All right. So what's God working on in me? I think it has to do a lot with, since the beginning of time for me, it's been time management, and making sure, sorry, and just making sure.
He needs a comfort pillow.
I do. I miss my pillow. My banky. No, but God's been working on, I don't know why you always start off with me. I can never get my thoughts straight. But basically just time management and making sure that I'm finding time to be with him every day, which I know seems like the duh thing for everybody, but it's like we're going through this course at our church called Practicing the Way, and it has told us and kind of pushed us forward in this area of making sure that we're praying every day and making sure that we're implementing scripture. And I think since my job has switched, I have found myself reading the Bible less because I just haven't, like, but it's weird because I'm surrounded by it at school because we're at a Christian school. So I feel like I'm getting it in me, but I'm not spending time with God and allowing him to work on me in those ways. So like, even though I'm surrounded by it, I'm finding myself more blinded to it because I'm just engulfed in it every day. So I think what he's teaching me is finding those moments throughout the day and making sure that we're putting scripture into ourselves, into myself, purposefully and intentionally is what I'm working on.
That's good.
I got it eventually.
Do you have a question?
No, I was just going to comment because I think that's one of the things that we can easily like find ourselves drifting into the path of like, oh, we're getting in enough throughout the day. We don't need to do it in our own time. Yeah. Like mentally, like it could be a subconscious thought. And that can be really bad too when we find ourselves in that habit and that pattern. Because I would do that too. I remember even in high school, I know it was like over 10 years ago at this point, but that still was like I didn't get the concept of what a personal one-on-one time with God was like. I avoided it. I didn't intentionally avoid it. But I purposefully thought, like, oh, I'm getting it enough at school. I don't need to implement it. And outside of that, I'm getting it enough. But there is a purpose behind intentionality in your time with Christ. And I think when we don't do that, we can easily drift into a place of complacency.
Yeah, it creates a blind spot.
Yeah.
Yep. My turn.
All right.
Boba tea? I'm sorry, I can't talk.
Got a bucket of boba.
Yes, truly. It is the boba.
The old boba bucket.
I'll hold it for now.
Sure.
For me, God's working on my patience a lot because I'm with 11 3-year-olds every day. And something about me is like I get overstimulated when people are saying my name a lot. And that happens a lot at church, but it happens a lot with 3-year-olds. Mm. Teacher, 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 like all the time. I hate the word teacher right now.
it's a new title you have.
I hate it. So
do they call you Miss Marie or Mrs.?
They call me Mrs. Fredette.
Mrs. Korea. Did you hear that slip?
Do it That's how they so say weird. It. Say your name how they say it.
They don't say that anymore, but one of them used to say Mrs. Dedette.
Mrs. Dedette. it's like Babette.
What was I saying? Patience. I get overstimulated. So like... I'm trying to work or have God work through me, like not using that as an excuse to be short-circuited, which is very easy to be like overwhelmed and then just like snap at usually not a kid, but like another adult or whatever. And in the same vein, I've always had RBF and I've never liked it, but I've never been like convicted by it. But now like the conviction's coming where like both, like all the things I'm involved with minister to people. So like RBF speaks to people like this person is approachable or not approachable.
Oh yeah.
And like I definitely like I am constantly happy, which is great, but my face doesn't say that. So I would love for my face to actually match. Like literally like up. Yeah.
Gotta kiss the proudies, so girl. Like,
so, like, oh, I don't care if I have wrinkles.
No, but, it's not about the wrinkles. It's about, like,
pulling your eyebrows up.
That's
never.
Because you got grouch face.
I know. So, anyway, that's what I do. I have RBF. I've always had it. One of my parents came up to me today because something was happening, and he thought that I was looking at him, and he was like, did my son have a bad day? And I was like, nope, sorry, just wasn't thinking, and my RBF came out. Like,
that's your relaxed
so, like,
state.
Like, I thought, like, I made a parent think that, like, he was, like, going to have to talk to his kid and, like, stuff like that. It's just, like, I want God to work in me to, like, make it so that, like, my expressions are joyful and, yeah, like, spreading light and not, like, worrying people, yeah, and intimidating people.
And that's probably just the humanness of being exhausted, too, where your body's just like...
I feel like I could use that as an excuse, but at the same time, like, I have always had RBF.
Yeah.
Like, always.
I guess it is your, like, it's...
Love language.
...state of mind. That's...
What? She paused, and I didn't know what she was going to say. I guess that is your love language.
She loves a good stare.
I hate staring.
That's good.
Okay, that's all. How about you guys?
Nice.
Want me to go first?
Sure.
Okay. Want me go?
Want me go?
You want me go first?
Oh, let's see. Well, honestly, recently, it's like been something that I hate because I've had this appear in my life in multiple seasons. I have had a lot of fear of health, like... And I think it's been instilled, honestly, since I saw family members, like, die of different types of health-related issues. And recently for me, I've just been seeing so much about people getting cancer in their 30s and people getting, like, all these different, like, problems that were not detected until it was too late. Rob's sorry.
He's trying to suck down a boba right now.
You're like completely like making this harder to talk about.
Serious conversation.
And he's like literally like convulsing over there trying to suck out a boba.
I got one.
Why'd you do that?
Got it?
Okay. Sorry, continue. Sorry.
Okay, anyways. I just have a lot of fear of my health. And so I've been really trying to figure out, okay, why... there's clearly a root problem of my lack of trust in God. And I acknowledge that. I'm like, so I'm really trying to work on figuring out why that is. And I think a lot of it has to do with, honestly, this past year, like seeing a lot of the trust and the faith I had and feeling super let down by God. And so I think a lot of that surrender of like, no matter the circumstance, I know you can get me through this if I am sick or if I do have a sickness or if I see a family member get sick or if my kids get sick, like to completely surrender that over takes a lot of like trust, you know? And I think I'm working on finding a relationship where I can trust God in that season, no matter what that is, even if it is... even if it isn't true, like I still have this root problem where I'm really trying to spend that quality time in scripture and in prayer that like, okay, God, I trust you. I'm surrendering this over to you. And I've noticed that at least this past week when I've spent intentional time, kind of like what you were talking about, Rob, like intentional time in prayer of just like confessing that I'm sorry, God, I have a lack of trust in you right now, but I really need to just feel your presence in the week and like give it to you. It's just frustrating because I feel like there's like been just attacks where I'm constantly seeing posts or people talking about their sicknesses and it just like instills an immediate fear. And so that's just me being truthful right now. I'm in this like weird bubble of like in and out of fear, and I'm like combating that. So
yeah, can I say something to that?
Go ahead.
I feel like for me, walking through just like not trusting God, that can be addicting. As weird as it sounds, like fear is addicting, pain is addicting, but like because it's comfortable for some people. Like once you know it, like you'd rather just stay in that than do the work to get out of it.
Yeah.
And like just like an addict who struggles with pornography would have to get rid of their temptations. Sometimes like whatever your temptation, like wherever it comes from, like it sounds like posts come and they like create thoughts, like just like time, like limit your time yeah. on social media might help with fear and then using that time more so. But like also recognizing like the enemy is trying to plant those things. That's why it's like, what's that? Like once you like notice something like a car or something, you start like, you start like saying like those cars are everywhere. Like Rob said that the other day about the Elon Musk cars, the spaceship ones.
Oh yeah.
He was like, those are everywhere. I was like, that's the first time I've ever seen one.
Oh.
And like, but he noticed it.
You gotta open your eyes.
I've honestly not seen one since, but anyway, like stuff like that, stuff like that happens even with fear. Like once you notice something and you like, you're like, you dwell on it for a little bit, it starts popping up everywhere else.
Right. And I think that's one thing I have to like realize, because there's times where I'm like, oh, well, maybe God's telling me something that I need to actually like look into or like, but then I'm like, God isn't fearful. Like, well, he's not of fear.
Right.
Like,
he doesn't induce that.
Yeah. He doesn't induce that fear. And so that is where I combat that with, okay, I can be diligent with my health. Like I can put intentional, like that I'm being wise in that way. I'm stewarding my body the way I should be doing. However, where it's eating me alive or I'm anxious about the thoughts or I'm like overanalyzing everything or I'm reading up all these stupid things, like that's not from God. That's not what he wants. Like, and so that's where I'm like, okay, get rid of this. Okay.
Yeah, it's that same pull of the whole idea of what's it doing to you and narrowing it down to like, is the devil trying to isolate me from something, from the word of God, from just time with God?
Right.
It, you know, the devil's always trying to isolate us in some way, whether it's physically from other people or whether it's mentally from other people or spiritually from God. Like he's always trying to isolate us in one of those ways. You know, we have the choice to either run to God with these things or dive into our own things with them. You know what I mean? And I think it always comes down to that simple, like God just being like, just trust me. Right.
Yeah. I think humanly, as like Marie kind of pointed out, we'll naturally want to go into that state of mind of continuing in that, like living in the state of fear, because it's just what our bodies naturally want to do. But what does our spirit say? Yeah. And that's to flee from fear and to carry wisdom and to carry this and speak truth over your life. So that's my life right now. Jeremy, what's up with you?
That's good. I think just one thing about speaking truth over and focusing on that. I think sometimes we could fall into a trap too of that, of speaking only partial truths that just make us feel good. So just thinking about like health, and the one truth would be like, oh, you know, there's like things that sound like good truth but might set us up for failure, and which I don't think is what you're doing. But just if people are like, oh, I'll just speak truth, like God takes care of me, but then a false belief of like, so I won't get sick and pass away. Right. It's like dangerous to just like try and speak that. It's like, what's the ultimate truth? My faith is in Jesus. I am going to a place where I will never have to fear this again. And so that doesn't always take away the fear initially, but it just, that's the ultimate realization.
Yeah. And I think that's another big part of it too, is like, okay, if I'm fearful of my health, okay, why? Well, I'm fearful that if I die, like, ultimately, that's like the worst case scenario. If I have to suffer through this suffering, right? But why? Like, even if I die, I'm gonna be freed in heaven where there isn't any of that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'll have a better place. This is such a temporary place. So the fear is like, maybe it is a little bit of the unknown, right? Like, maybe there is a little bit of that, like, wow, I can't conceptualize what that would be like, you know?
And who knows, not speaking this into anyone's life, but the idea of suffering drawing people closer to God, who knows what your spiritual life would be walking through something like that and handling it in the way that God has called you to handle it. So everybody always say, you know, like so many, there's just this idea that, you know,
Jeremy had kind of mentioned it, like my life can only be perfect, and therefore that's when I'm going to be close to God, and I'll thank God for those things, and that's the life I live in. But God draws close to us through times of suffering and pain. Not that he causes them, but this life has those things in it. And
we're not freed from the sufferings of this world.
Right, but he's right there with us through it, and and if handled in the, like, if your eyes are on him the whole way through, your spirit's going to be a whole lot stronger than it is now when we're healthy. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, there's a, from my understanding of it all, because I don't know that I've ever gone through any major, terrible, horrible suffering, but having seen from the outside that suffering brings people to a place of a different understanding of God that brings them to a, just a closeness and just a stronger belief that's unshakable, right?
Well, I think the book of Job models that completely. He literally suffered the worst possible things, right? Like, in his life, yet he still had this honor for God and like this understanding that no matter the circumstance, he is God and his will be done. And I think his perseverance to wanting that closeness, that relationship with God, is like evident through all of the books and in Job.
He's good.
Yeah, anyway, sorry. That was a long conversation.
We knew it would. We're always like, let's open up with a little zinger. It's just how it works. For me, I'm going through a couple books right now that I have to take in strides. Read a little bit, take a break, read a little bit, take a break. Just assessing through, so two books, one called Try Softer, which I don't know if I've already mentioned in the book.
I don't think you mentioned that.
Try Softer. I'm on a continued journey of, I want to undo all the things in my life, all the trauma in my life. I want to undo everything that's led me. So we've had a lot of victories. We've overcome pornography. Now it's time to overcome just every other thing of that my mind works in. Lies about myself, lies about how other people view me, lies of how I earn my worth, all those things. I just want to be done with it. So I'm trying to learn a lot more about it. So Try Softer is a book that is really good, goes into a lot of science of trauma and other different things, which I never really believed that I had suffered from trauma, but I think kind of where the family dynamic is, we can agree that like some weird childhood things happened. And so I'm reading through that and learning how I view the world because of how I was raised and trying to undo a lot of that. I have if I'm useful, people will like me around. If I lose my worth, people don't care about me anymore. It's all those things trying to undo. So Try Softer is really good. And then reading another book off of a friend's recommendation, Corey Valley, which is he's at our church. He's doing such an amazing job leading other men through their struggle with pornography in the midst of him figuring out himself. He's like the leave no man behind sergeant pulling people out of the mud pit while he's still in there, like making sure he brings as many people out with him as possible. It's honestly really cool.
He's the realest guy. Like,
he's set so many things in motion, and just he even says things because he's getting so much help. He says things that help me figure out, like, oh, that's why
I do that.
Obviously, it's just crazy the amount of things. But he recommended a book called Unwanted, and it's a book about why we have unwanted behavior and what we can actually learn from listening to our unwanted behavior. So it's a really hard read, I think, because it's forcing you to focus on what you do not want to think about. And so, like, one of them is like, no, we've talked about pornography, so it's like we just have to talk about some real things in it. One of them talks about, like, you can figure out your view of, like, what you were missing as a kid, what kind of trauma has happened based off of the type of fantasies you might have. Or in this book, it's talking about the type of pornography that you might turn to actually speaks to what you were missing as a child.
Interesting.
Yeah, well, because like we've learned a lot of things of when people grow up and they're transgender or gay, it's normally there's something that was missing that they needed emotionally. And then when they went through puberty, their brain turned everything sexual because that's what our brains do during puberty.
What happens?
And turned the trauma into a sexual need, no longer an emotional need. And so it's going into that. So it's like, I haven't gotten to that part of the book, but it's going to be a part of like, if this is a fantasy or pornography that you had turned to the most, this is a trauma that you, or this is a way you view yourself or a way you, and it's like, it's a really interesting book, but it's a Christian book. And it seems really good, but both of those are really heavy.
Yep. Yeah.
So we're like,
I think the first chapter you read of that book, like you were like, you woke me up just crying.
Yeah, I woke her up like in the middle
so
of the night.
So heavy for you.
Yeah,
heavy stuff. So, yeah, I'm just unraveling, just still pulling the threads and seeing what pops out. But I think there's going to be a lot of good from it. And
I don't think like that journey is ever going to be something we feel completed in. And I think that's a beautiful thing about being in the constant renewal of your mind and being more like Christ and trying to do the best on carrying holiness. And that's a daily act, a daily pursuit of that. It's not just like I've done it, I've completed it, I know who I am, like I'm good. We can have those identities, but we can still wrestle with those things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's okay. That's where you give yourself grace. It's like, okay, I know I'm still working through this, but God gave me the freedom, he's given me the strength, he's given me the grace, and I'm gonna be in pursuit of that.
Yeah.
That's kind of similar to what I was thinking. It was just making me think like, so for a lot of men, porn turns into the coping mechanism for all these things that are just compiling together. So like for women who don't struggle with porn or even who do, or for the guys who have overcome it, what is that thing that like we use to cope? And like what are all the things underneath that that like we are either ignoring or don't recognize? Like, because it's not just like a Jeremy problem. It's not like Jeremy has overcome porn, but now he has all these subliminal things that he has to work on. Yeah. Like Marie has a problem. What is that big problem? Mm-hmm. And there's probably multiple, but like, and like, what are all those subliminal things?
Just a bunch of branches like, that we, like, roots.
It's crazy. Like, what are my addictive behaviors or what are just, what is that? Food for thought. I was going to say fruit for basket.
I think that's why I like try softer, because it's not a deep focus into sexual addiction. This is the battle in your mind, and it goes through the type of just all the different things, people who get, who are people pleasers, people, well, you know, all this different stuff. So it's really good.
I was going to say something in regards to that whole like addictive personality, and I know, did I turn the mic off? Okay. Sorry about that. There is like, for me, like I know for a while I had this standard that I had to achieve or keep my, like my standard to the place that I thought people viewed me as. And so I know in my personal life now I can find myself being there where like, oh, I got to achieve the next thing. I got to go. It's like this addiction that you must get this high from, right? Like this like adrenaline rush. And I think that comes with any form of addiction you have in your life, where if you don't find that like, okay, is this pleasing to God? Is this honoring God? Or is this pleasing for myself? Is this a self, like, idolatry, right? Like, am I putting myself above the, like, of what God wants? Like, is the things that I want only for glory to me?
Yeah, I think the one thing that changes my thought on that approach is a little bit in the book to be hyper aware and I forget what it's like, caringly aware, she uses the term, like to not look at it and be like, oh, why do you have this problem?
Yeah.
Why do you feel the need to do this? It's like, okay, what might have happened today that caused you to feel this way? And you start to, like, that's why it's try softer. It's not try harder, because that's what we try and do,
right?
Is we try harder to get better. And so it's like, try softer. Let's be attuned to what we're what we're at. And like, we've had conversations even recently where I happily am no longer at a place where I realize I'm already gonna look at porn, or I already am there and I'm like, oh, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. But I am at a place where I can tell when I wouldn't care if something popped up and I'm doing a normal thing. I'm working, I'm doing something, I'm not even trying, but I sense that and I'm able to stop and say like, okay, well, what's happened so far that this heart issue, and it's like going back way farther to like, all right, what might have happened? Oh, you're feeling not cared about right now.
Yeah.
Let's just talk for a second about why that's not true. And like, I think there's something to be said about caring about, like going in like a caring parent would.
To your mind.
To yourself.
To yourself.
And like when those things are happening, to be like, well, why? Let's investigate. Why do you think you're feeling this? I think it's a big deal. And so the book's really cool.
Yeah.
I dig it. But it's just hard to get through, so. We'll talk about it for the whole year while I'm trying to finish this. And it's hard on digital. You never know. Am I reading a booklet that's taking me this long, or is this a huge novel? I have no idea.
Still in chapter one.
I just know I'm at 47%, and I don't know what that means.
Yeah. What is the thickness?
Right. Like, what is the book thickness? I don't know. Anyway.
To Kindle.
Oh, Kindle's has been a lifesaver. I've read a lot of books.
It's the convenience, but you really don't know how thick the book is. Anyways. Were you going to say something, Rob?
I think Rob just really wants some boba, and he's getting mad.
No, I was going to tell you guys a quick little story about how one of my third graders wrote a story about a thick monkey. That's all.
We're derailing here.
Wow, yeah. Thick monkey.
It was just a very random story. He was supposed to write 5 sentences about a monkey because we're learning about sentences in third grade. And he said, once I was in the jungle and I saw a thick monkey. And that was the first sentence of his story. And you guys talked about a thick book.
Was he talking about like a gorilla?
He wrote it with 2 C's. So, I mean, I...
he knew what he was saying.
he's a good Christian boy. So I don't think he, so I think it was just, that's a funny word that he's heard. And so I think, that's why it was funny to me.
That's funny to me.
Semi-innocent.
A+.
Speaking of thick monkeys, we had a topic today about intimacy. And I didn't know how to segue into it, so.
That doesn't work. So this conversation, this podcast we're going to talk about is about intimacy.
I thought it was perfect.
That should be the title of today's podcast.
Thick monkeys.
Thick monkey.
Speaking of thick monkeys.
It says here in my notes, as soon as we're done talking about section one, bring up the monkey story. Right. Just to help Jeremy segue.
Help my segue.
Yeah, so I don't know.
You had a thought process on intimacy. We're gonna talk about that real quick.
Well, yeah, I thought that we could have a conversation just about intimacy in general. And I feel like there's been a lot recently of conversations about intimacy and just like what people in the world right now think intimacy is, or what does it look like to people these days versus what it actually should be. And yeah, I wanted to just dive in that conversation and
can we make the statement now that we don't think that when we say the word intimacy, we're not talking about sex.
Yeah, that's the thing, really, right? Like a lot. So people can, like, a lot of people believe the term intimacy can be in correlation to just sex, but in reality, no. Ding,
ding, ding, ding. So what would we define intimacy as if we're going to talk about it for the rest of the podcast?
Well,
what would it be?
I would like to know personally from you guys, like, what has been the most intimate parts of your marriage that you've like learned to experience together? You know, now versus when you first were married, like, what were some of the bigger things that you guys have really found to bring you that intimacy?
So I define intimacy as like an intentional closeness, like, and I think I don't really know of any particular examples, but I think our greatest intimacy is always during times of trial. where it's like, if this is not, if we are not intimate, mm-hmm. then we will grow apart.
Yeah.
And that kind of sounds bad. Like we're only intentionally close when things are bad. Kind of like people are like praying to God when life gets rough, but like when life is good, like they're not. But I think it's more so like a defense mechanism for our marriage. Like if things are rough, or if like circumstances around us, like in the people around us are trying, then we see like, okay, we got to put our defense up. Like obviously you guys know, being past like in a pastoral position, you see a lot of failing marriages.
Yeah.
You see a lot of struggling wives and struggling husbands. And so like every time that something like that pops up, we reflect, how do we not get to a place like that?
That's good.
And I think those are probably for like our marriage, the best moments of intimacy.
Yeah. And I would say for me, the moments that I felt the absolute closest have been moments of forgiveness, for real. It's been moments where I don't deserve forgiveness, and she will look at me and say that she forgives me. And like having literal weight taken off my shoulders, knowing that the person that I've hurt has forgiven me, there's a closeness and there's just an intimacy there that I'll never be able to forget or not replicate, but I don't know. It's just, there's nothing that can compare to an intimacy like that.
Yeah.
Because it's just, it's being on the same page in a very, very emotional and spiritual way.
Yeah, it's so raw that like there's really no other option than closeness.
And one thought that just popped into my mind, and I don't know, well, I'll say it anyway, but
okay.
But it's this idea of, you mentioned the people that get close to God when they are, when they go through hard times and all of a sudden they find God and they're close to God. And if we kind of took that same idea into like the marriage world, it's this idea of, yeah, we can have hard times and be close, but if we don't intentionally work on our marriages, like through dating, like we have been doing and things like that, even during the good times, then we're squandering the time that we're basically growing apart, even though we don't know it. Like I don't know, like there's just, I'm losing my train of thought, that's kind of
the picture that like pops into my head is like, during the good times, you're like building blocks, and then bad times happen and like things start to fall apart, but it's not the whole structure. It's like the unnecessary pieces are falling apart, and like the foundation and the strong pieces are there, and then you can just keep building on that. I don't know if that was like a clear picture, but like,
you made it
I'm
better.
Not a, I'm not a,
you made it better.
Yeah. Anyway. So what about you guys?
Well, if I can more of like
what?
Practical ways that have helped our marriage with like being intimate with each other is, I think, the intentional like looking at each other in conversations. I think phones can be a big problem in relationships these days, where, you know, and I'm working on that. You've gotten so good with your phone. It's been pretty awesome. I'm giving you a knee slap for that, but I think sometimes
it's very funny.
Your knee
slap.
Your knee slap.
That's supposed
Jeremy.
To be a clap. Knee clap. But no, I think there's a big thing about looking into somebody's eyes and actually listening to what they're saying and showing them that you're paying attention to them and having that conversation. That's just a practical way that has helped our marriage. And I think one thing for me personally is that I have this habit I've created, at least. Like, this is just our personal relationship, but whenever we're in the car, I always have just my hand on him. Like, we're either holding hands or my hand's on his shoulder or like my hand is on his head. And like, there's this intentional.
I didn't do anything wrong.
It's your eyes.
This is the one problem of being friends for so long. He read my mind.
I read his micro expression. It literally, I thought I saw his eyebrow twitch and then he turned it off and I was like,
look, I didn't say or do anything. Like, I saw you. Sorry.
No, but like the kids noticed that. Keep your hands okay. Off me. No, like the kids notice that there is this intentional like care I have for Jeremy. And like, I think that speaks a lot because I notice like there's relationships where they get comfortable and they don't do that anymore. They don't hold hands. They don't show that intimate part of just like showing them that you care. So that's just been a practical thing I've done. But also just one thing that I know for sure that brings us intimacy is praying together, like expressing it together, because that's a vulnerable thing to do anyways, is to outwardly pray. I think it's sometimes it's uncomfortable. Like, quite honestly, it's uncomfortable for some people to just like pray out loud, whether you're with a spouse or not, just by yourself. Like, it's a vulnerable moment. And I think when you have...
I have a hot take on that, on people like that.
Oh.
What? People like what?
That can't pray out loud?
People that don't pray out loud, I have a hot take on them.
What's your hot take?
Hot takes with Marie.
They are not proud of their relationship with God. And they're hiding something from themselves.
And this has been Hot Takes with Marie.
Chicka-chow.
Did not end it.
But, yeah, I think there is this place of being able to be open with each other and pray over each other, because that, in to me, those bring that brings the relationship close. And I think also another thing is like finding how to speak their love language and do the things that they need, not what you need, and finding ways to be intimate with the things that your spouse would need. And you know, that is a daily thing, I think, where you have to constantly remind yourself, like, okay, how do I speak with grace and with ways that make him feel, like, important and, you know, worthy? I know my words shouldn't be what determines that for him, but if I can honor him in that way, that does create this intimacy. And... like, I feel like all those connections that we are talking about, all of the ways that can, like, create intimacy, it does just bind a marriage really well. Like, I think it, like, it's like you're putting on the armor together, right? Like, it's like you are doing everything you can. Why are you laughing?
Nothing. I didn't catch that one.
What you're saying is good.
Okay.
What you're saying is good.
Yeah, I'm not laughing at you.
It's okay.
It's late.
That's so okay, I know. I'll conclude with that, though. I think when you pray, you add the qualities of what works in your marriage, like things that, practical ways of being intentional in your marriage and creating that intimacy that way, it does create a like an armor over your marriage, a protection over your marriage, especially when God is the center. Because if you both are in pursuit of God, your marriage is going to thrive. If you're not, that's going to be a problem. Yeah. It's like the whole unequally yoked thing.
Yeah, I agree.
People don't know what that means if you're not. Anyways, if you wanna,
don't just eat egg whites.
I was about to cue up Marie for something we were talking about. Sorry. In the car. It's like, well, I guess now I don't need to. We were talking about egg whites, but we were mentioning this idea of what causes intimacy problems in marriages right now, and what have we seen and things like that, and so.
Well, I think one of the things that I was thinking for what makes me feel close, I like to know what Haley's thinking, no matter what it is. I like to know what she's thinking. I don't care that much if she's on Instagram or something else. I want to know what's funny. Like, when she smiles, I'm like, well, what is it? Like,
it's usually one of the many reels I'll send to, like, yeah, I was on a roll the other night. Okay.
that's her thing. But,
hot take.
No, but I just want to know, like, what are you thinking about? Like, she always like silence in the car, which is fine. Why don't you just talk about what you're thinking? Like, you don't need complete silence. You can talk about it. But when I get to hear those things, I think that makes me feel closer because I know I'm not like pulling out of her. I don't have to poke and prod and like, come on, are you gonna talk or what? Like, what's, I just like to know what people are thinking, which I think you do a good job.
A lot of the times I don't know what I'm thinking. There's a million things going on in my head. So I'm just like, I don't know.
Yeah, really. Sometimes it's that. But I think an intimacy problem is perceived thoughts, like, or misinterpreted
assumptions.
Yeah. It's a lot of assumptions. When you say this, what you really mean is this, but I'm not going to confront that that's what you really mean. I'm just going to react and, you know, and working through.
We can even share a recent story about that. Like that.
Did we say that last
podcast? No, we didn't. We went on a double date with the Valleys about this, and it was something that we learned about each other, which was really cool.
We could have had them as guest hosts.
We should do that one of these days.
Mm-hmm. They're really great.
I love them.
This is exactly what he was talking about, though, just like the misconception. So it was morning. I was doing the dishes or something, and I asked him a question. I said, "How was the gym?" Because he went in the morning, and he got all like weird, and was like, "Oh, I just ended up going for a walk." And then he almost got flushed. Like I was reading into him because it was like, okay, he's hiding something from me. Like some things just like. I don't know. I just started getting frustrated because I felt like he was just acting odd. And so in my mind, I was just going through like, oh, what if he slipped up or he relapsed or whatever. Like I went down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
And it was all day. And we were just tense. Like we had conversations, but we weren't mad at each other. We weren't arguing, but there was this like weird disconnection. And so later that day, you talked about what was in your head because the book kind of helped you process why you reacted the way you did. So
try softer.
Why don't you share?
Oh yeah, I realized because I was upset a bunch of the day and felt like just off the whole day, and I realized again I have a performance based issue. I need to be a certain way for people to think I'm valuable. Haley loves health. She loves doing that for herself. So I was supposed to meet someone at the gym. They ended up sleeping in. So I didn't get to, I drove to a gym I don't have a membership to. So I spent the 45 minutes of driving there and driving back. I got back and I was like, it's too late. The gym is going to be too busy. I'm going to go for a walk. So I went for a walk. In my head, that's not a good enough workout to be worth her time. That's what rolled around my head. So when she said, how was the morning? Anything besides I benched this much and worked this hard on it or whatever is not good enough. And so I was really like, well, shoot, she's going to be upset.
Disappointed.
She's going to be disappointed. She's not going to value me today because I didn't work out hard enough. Mm. So then I put in the assumption that that's why she asked. She asked and she was saying, tell me about your workout and I'll tell you if I'm proud of you or not.
Wow.
That's what my brain heard. Mm. She just said, how was your morning or how was the gym?
I just said, how was the gym?
And it was, tell me how your workout went and I'll tell you if that was good enough. Mm. That's what I heard. And I knew it wasn't good enough, so I didn't want to tell her about it. So I instinctively was just like, yeah, it was fine. Which she heard, I had a really bad morning and I relapsed and I don't want to talk about it.
Like,
and it was just a quick dialogue, but both of us were really set off.
And like when he came home, I was like, wow, I thought you were struggling all day long and you were waiting to just confess to me. Like, and I was like, it's crazy what happens with when you have these preconceived notion, these assumptions on your spouse, when that's when the enemy just wreaks havoc on your brain and it just fills them with lies. Well,
and that's the breeding ground for what we were fearing.
Yeah. Right.
So that will cause shame, that will cause distrust, that will escalate until finally, well, you don't feel worthy at all. Why don't you slip up even more? And like it causes those things.
It's like a snowball effect, right? Like it just can go until you just take a pause and be like, okay, let's talk.
Mm-hmm. Let's figure out where there was miscommunication. But it kind of opened our eyes a lot to how I need to learn to speak to him, whereas he then needs to learn to tame his brain and rewire his brain on how he thinks I'm going to respond and act, because I'm not going to act in a place where I'm going to abandon him. Right. Like, and that's kind of his mentality, is this abandonment mentality. And so it's like, okay, how do we piggyback?
A healthy fix for that is to say, like, I realized it clicked for you when I said it, but a way that we fix it is I say, when you said this, I heard this. That's really what we end up doing a lot of time. When you said this, I heard this.
Yep.
And, well, that's not what I meant. Well, that's what I heard. So we just got to, I need you to talk it out of me.
Which I think that's like something Pastor Nate told us in our premarital counseling, was like, when you hear something, you repeat the way you hear it. So you have to make sure that it's the same. Because if you're hearing it something different, you need to vocalize it then and there so it can be corrected if that's not what you're hearing. Mm-hmm. So it's a good just practical source. But that being said, after that, I was like, I felt way more connected with you. Yeah. I felt all of that like, I feel at rest with you. I feel connected with you. Like, it was nice. It was a good night.
Wow. I don't recall that.
Jeremy, can you tell us what you think she meant by what she just did?
So when she said that.
Said, bow chicka wow wow, into the microphone.
What did you hear?
No, anyway, so we'll move on. So Marie, what was the thing that we talked about? Remember in the car you talked about gratitude?
Oh, that's my thing. Yeah.
So it's an overwritten.
So if you could talk about it.
I've noticed in myself and in lots of wives, I can't say I've noticed this in husbands, they have a hard time feeling close with their husbands because they do not care to be grateful for their husbands or for what their husband is doing. And they would rather be a victim of a situation. They would rather say, like, my husband doesn't do this. I do this.
That's good.
I lead our spiritual marriage or our spiritual lives. I do all the cleaning. I organize everything, and he goes to work and makes our life easy because of the money he makes. So, like, they don't flip it and be like, my husband works however many hours. A lot of times guys are working 10 hours or more, but, like, it doesn't matter. Like, if your husband is working 5 hours a day, like, be grateful for it. But I've found myself in, like, the boat of I'm spiritually leading and being ungrateful for that. This was a long time ago, by the way. Like, just being ungrateful. And that makes you feel so disconnected. And, like, it feeds into pride issues, but it also is just, like, you're unable to see the good things in your spouse.
Right.
When you are only seeing the good things in yourself.
Yeah.
Then you don't see the bad things in yourself if you're focusing on the good things. So I think gratitude has a huge part to play in how close you are able to feel with anybody, but especially your spouse.
I could testify to that in your marriage too, just knowing where you guys were versus where you are now. And that was a huge thing, I think, in you guys, was just like the complete drastic switch of when you, like, honored Rob's, who he was as a person and his spiritual life. And it was like pretty cool to witness.
Well, you stop trying to change somebody when you're grateful for them.
Yeah.
And it's exhausting to try to change somebody.
Yeah, practicing gratitude is hard for a lot of people because we're so quick to the negative.
Yep.
I just want to say that I wasn't trying to cue you up for that so that you could say nice things about me.
Yeah, Rob.
I was like,
so Marie, what do you have to say?
Go ahead, say it.
Do you want to share?
Tell me about my eyes.
Tell me more about my eyes.
That's what it is. No, it was just that you mentioned it in the car, and it was just very...
I had forgotten what we were talking about as a whole, so I was like, what?
I know, so I was like trying to cue you into it to get you back into it, but it sounded more like a desperate plea for you to be nice to me, and that's not what it was. I was like, she said wisdom, and I want everybody to hear wisdom, but it came across as, you know, what it did. Anyway... is there anything else that we wanted to talk about there?
I think that concludes for the conversations. I think we've got some good points going on.
All right.
Thanks for tuning in. Stay tuned for more.
Double. Take home.
Well, see you later.